Welcome to the Story Mine. It's a beautiful day today, no matter whether it's snowing where you're at or whether it's blowing where you're at or whether the sun's shining. It's a beautiful day, and it's a nice time to be hearing stories.
I'm Kathy Barker, and I'm here with my co-host,
David Bullock.
And we have stories for you. Tales.
What?
Tales.
That's all the same to me.
It's tales.
Oh, so we're going to be telling stories about animals.
That's right, Dave. Everyone loves animals, especially our own pets.
How many people remember the first pet they ever had? I do.
I had a dog named Tippy, but what animal did you have as your first pet?
I had a cat. But before I tell you that story, I think it's interesting to note that a cat's purr, according to science, is in the frequency range of between 25 and 150 hertz. Various investigators have shown that sound frequencies in this range can improve bone density and promote healing. No wonder my cat, Percy, when I wasn't feeling good and had broken my back, was always crawling up on top of me and purring. He was helping me to heal. At least that's what this science report says.
I remember Percy was always laying on top of you, purring, and you healed quite nicely.
So this is the story of my first pet. When I was a little boy, I was able to hold a cat, and that's when I found out how cuddly they are. It's also when I learned about their purr. From the time I could walk, I chased after cats. Cats fascinated me, and I wanted to catch them and hold them so I could feel their soft fur, and if I was lucky, I might be able to feel the vibration of their purr. I loved cats because my Grandma Peterson loved cats. Actually, I later found out that she didn't love cats at all, but she couldn't stand to see a stray go hungry, so she opened her heart to as many cats as would come and eat the food that she placed on the small concrete porch at the back entrance to her comfortable little house that had been made out of two small little mining shacks. At first, there were only a few cats, but it didn't take long before I could practice my numbers by counting the cats that hung around Grandma's house. 1, 2, 3, 4. I felt like such a big boy knowing that I could count. One day, Grandma called to me when I was playing and told me that she could hear little kittens meowing underneath her house. And she promised that she would let me have one of those kittens if I'd go into the dark crawl space under the house and bring them all out. Grandma told me that she'd found a hole where their mother had crawled through to get under the house, and that once all of the kittens were safely outside, Grandpa would seal off that hole so no other cats could get underneath their house. I learned that the crawl space was too low for a big man like my grandpa to crawl into, but a little boy such as myself could easily accomplish the task. I was excited to know that I was helping my grandpa and grandma and the kittens. If I helped my grandparents, I was going to have my very own cat. Without hesitation, I agreed, and with flashlight in hand and my grandparents to support me, I crawled under the floorboards. I'll have to admit it was one of the scariest things I'd ever done in my so few years of life. It was dark, except where I shined the flashlight. And where I shined the flashlight, I saw the scariest things like spider webs and spiders. I even found the skeleton of a dead cat that looked like it had been laying there for years. I was afraid, more afraid of spiders because my brothers had told me that there was a big giant spider that lived under the front porch of our house, and they said that if it ever bit me, I would die. Perhaps that's why I always played in the backyard between my grandparents' house and mine. One of my favorite games was Catch the Kitty. As much as I tried, I wasn't able to catch any of the cats that my grandmother took care of, but I had always wanted to have a cat as a pet. So at Grandma's request, I was ready to do a job only a little person could do. That way, I'd get to have my very own cat. There I was, in the darkness, under the house, crawling towards the sound of the meowing, and my imagination was exploding. The spiders I saw scurried away from me, and the spider webs fell away with the use of a stick Grandpa had given me to defend myself from any monsters. But Grandpa laughed and told me there wouldn't be any. It was that very day I realized that spiders were monsters, just tiny monsters that made me scared. "I'm scared, Grandma," I shouted. "There's spiders in here." Grandma called to me from outside and told me that she'd told those spiders not to bite me and to run away. I believed her because they were all running away and trying to hide. I felt like a big, ferocious giant and became brave instead of scared. I was going to bring the kittens out from under Grandma's house and be able to choose the one that would be mine. So it didn't matter how many spiders there were. Crawling on my belly, I shined the flashlight towards the kittens and inched towards them. Finally, there they were, only a few days old, so tiny they hardly had any fur, and some of them even still had their eyes closed. I put them in a basket Grandma had given me. Then I turned around and crawled out from under the house. Grandpa immediately closed off the opening, and Grandma left the kittens there in the basket so their mother would find them. I didn't have any difficulty choosing the one I wanted. It was the smallest, a little golden kitty that I immediately named Goldie. I wanted to take it home right then, but Grandma told me that it was too young and needed its mother to take care of it until it got older. "When it's older, Davy, you can catch her and you can have her as your very own cat." Within a few hours, the kitten's mother had taken each one of them to a new home in the tin sheds that were behind Grandpa and Grandma's house. I didn't see much of them for a few weeks because Grandma told me to leave them alone so their mother could care for them. One day I saw them all playing behind Grandma's house, and I tried to catch them, but they were too fast and afraid of me. I knew that if I wanted the golden cat, I'd have to come up with a way to catch it. My grandpa told me about a wash tub trap that would help me capture the cats. He showed me a galvanized wash tub and told me to tip it over and prop it up with a stick. He helped me find one, and then he took a spool of string and tied the end of the string to the stick. He said if I put cat food under the upside-down wash tub, the cats would go under the tub to eat the food, and when Goldie went under and started eating, I could yank the stick out by pulling on the string. With no stick to keep the tub propped up, it'd fall and trap her. He didn't tell me that the cat would bite and scratch me when I tried to grab it with my hands, though. I caught Goldie on the second day of my trapping adventure, and she scratched me so bad my hands and arms swelled up and itched so bad. Grandpa told me I was allergic to cats, and if I kept it in the house with me, my skin would be itchy, and I'd sneeze all the time, and my nose would be runny. Grandpa put a small cord around Goldie's neck as a leash. Then he tied it to the clothesline post. He told me to be gentle to her and offer good food. He said eventually, if I was nice to her, she wouldn't be afraid of me anymore. It seemed to take forever, but eventually, just like Grandpa said, Goldie and I became close friends. I remember one warm spring day, watching Grandma weeding the flower garden, and I was holding Goldie on my lap. The sun was so comfortably warm, that's when Goldie started to purr. It was one of the happiest days. I felt so good to feel Goldie's purr, I did fall into one of the most pleasant sleeps I'd ever had. Goldie accompanied me on my excursions throughout the neighborhood. It was good having her as a companion on my mischievous romps into the river bottoms. Goldie'd follow me anywhere. We were inseparable. Goldie and I had been best friends for about a year when I went outside to visit with my grandpa while he sat in his favorite lawn chair. He was crying. "What's the matter, Grandpa?" I hadn't noticed that he was holding Goldie in his lap. Grandpa told me that Goldie was very sick. She was dying, and there wasn't anything he could do to make her better. No one I ever knew had died, and I didn't know what that meant. Grandpa said that Goldie was going to go live with Father in heaven and become Jesus's cat because she had been such a good kitty to Davy. That didn't keep Grandpa from crying, though, because he said that he was going to miss her so much. I remember sitting down next to him and crying as Goldie died. After Grandpa wrapped her in a small towel and put her in a shoebox, he dug a hole in the ground in Grandma's flower garden and buried her where all the beautiful golden daffodils were planted. Just thinking about it, I know that from that time on, as long as they lived and kept that flower garden in the backyard of their little house, Grandma's flowers were the most beautiful of all the flowers that grew in the neighborhood. She said it was because Goldie, Davy's little kitty friend, watched over them and fed them the proper nourishment that would make them become beautiful. Well, I've had about a dozen cats since that time, but I don't think I've had any better than that little feral wildcat that scratched the dickens out of me when I claimed her for my own.
That's a wonderful story, Dave. Amazing that you have such a memory that you can remember so far back in your life.
I wonder how many people really can remember many of the experiences they had when they were little children.
Hopefully, from what you've shared about your early memories, will prompt people to write down and think about some of their early memories.
Kathy, did you know that dogs aren't colorblind?
I had always heard they were.
I have too. But according to the internet, dogs aren't colorblind. They may be a little bit color challenged, though. They see colors differently than we do. Dogs don't seem to be able to see reds and greens very well, so their world probably seems to be more in shades of yellow and blue. Kathy, don't you have a dog tale written by one of those most illustrious, famous authors that writes more stuff than anybody else?
Oh, you mean anonymous? A farmer had some puppies he needed to sell. He painted a sign advertising the availability of 4 puppies. He set about nailing it to a post on the edge of his yard. As he was driving the last nail into the post, he felt a tug on his overalls. He looked down into the eyes of a little 5-year-old girl. "Mister," the girl said, "I want to buy one of your puppies." "Well," said the farmer as he rubbed the sweat off the back of his neck, "these puppies come from fine stock and will cost a good deal of money." Disappointed, the girl dropped her head for a moment. Then, reaching deep into the pocket of her overalls, she pulled out a handful of change, consisting of mostly pennies, then a few nickels, and dimes. She held it up to the farmer. "I've got 39 cents. I earned 40 cents feeding Grandma's chickens and spent a penny for a bazooka bubble gum. Is that enough to take a look?" The kind farmer, hoping for a bit more, looked at the child and said, "Sure." And with that, he let out a whistle. "Here, Dolly." Out from the doghouse and down the ramp ran Dolly, the mother, followed by 4 little balls of white fur. The little girl pressed her face against the chain-link fence. Her eyes danced with delight as the dogs made their way to the farmer on the other side of the fence. Then the little girl noticed something else, something stirring inside the doghouse. Slowly, another little ball appeared, this one noticeably smaller. Down the ramp it slid. Then, in a somewhat awkward manner, the little pup began hobbling toward the others, doing its best to catch up. "I want that one," the little girl said, pointing to the runt. The farmer knelt down at the girl's side and gently said, "Little one, you don't want that puppy. She's not worth a dime. I'm only selling the other four because I'm sure no one would want her. Who knows what would become of her, poor little girl? She will never be able to run and play with you like these other dogs will." With that, the little girl stepped back from the fence while looking up into the weathered face of the old man. She reached down and began rolling up one leg of her trousers, revealing a steel brace running down both sides of her leg, attaching itself to a specially made shoe. Looking into the farmer's blue eyes, she said, "You see, sir, I don't run too well myself, and she will need someone who understands. That's the dog I want." With tears in his eyes, the farmer reached down and picked up the little pup. Holding it carefully, he handed it to the little girl. "Will you take 39 cents for him?" asked the little girl. "No, young lady, I won't," answered the farmer. The girl's face fell and all hope drained from her countenance. "There's no charge for love, my friend. There is no charge for love. She's yours and was meant to be since the beginning of time. She's always been meant for you. She's yours. There is no charge for love."
Wow, Kathy, that story brings a tear to my eye. It's kind of hard to talk right now. You know, that reminds me of a little American Eskimo dog that I adopted when I was in college. Nobody wanted that dog because it was born with only three legs. You know, that dog was one of the best dogs I ever had. Because of his desire to learn and to please, I would take him with me and my friend. He was a trainer in Schutzhund training. My little American Eskimo, that was a runt with only three legs, became a protection-trained dog. His name was Frodo Bangus. Having him as a companion reminds me of a poem I read once about a dog called "Don't Cry for Me When I'm Gone." 90 are given to man, but ours is a much briefer span. So though I give you all my heart, the time will come when we must part. But all around you you'll see creatures that speak to you of me. A tired horse, a hunted thing, a sparrow with a broken wing. Pity and help, I know you will, and somehow I will be with you still. And I shall know, although I'm gone, the love I gave you lingers on. I'm sure those were the words my Frodo was trying to get me to understand after he'd been abusedly injured by a ruthless neighbor. His left hip was fractured, and he was born without his front right leg. The vet sent him home with us to die, as I wasn't willing to let him go over a broken bone. I'd help him to survive for sure, and being the best dog I'd ever owned, I refused to accept the suffering he endured. Having lost the use of his back left leg and not having his right front leg, I found him one day hopping around towards the garden, two legs he was hopping on, determination strong. I felt a pride in my dog, and then I saw how his eyes were full of tears, and I understood his painful song. The doctor said he was in pain, and it was a miracle that he could stand. It'd be best to let him go. Do you understand? The thoughts that scurried through my head as I cradled him in my arms were of his younger puppy years and, oh, his many charms. Today, there was no gentle nudge with an intense I love you gaze, only a heart that's filled with tears, remembering our joy-filled days. But an angel just appeared to me, and she said, "You should cry no more. God also loves our canine friends and has installed a doggy door."
Well, Dave, now you're making me cry. But the sorrow we experience at the death of our loving animal friends is really overpowered by the enjoyment and enrichment they give to our lives.
That's right. But, you know, our program's just about over, and I want to end on a lighter note. Last week at the Weber Storytelling Festival, we met a wonderful storyteller, and she has a song about her dog.
Here's Beth Horner.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Well, the whole thing started because it looked like fun when other people had a pet. I'm going to get me one, I said. Have a little friend around the place. So I went to the pet store down the street. Lying in the middle of a canine heap was a sleepy little fellow with a quiet sort of a face. Well, the next 2 weeks were certainly strange. What with the barking and the thinking up of names. Old Blue, he wasn't, and Spot didn't really fly. So I called him Harry, just because that's how he is, and that's how he was. And that's how the house gets more and more as days go by. My dog, my dog, had no good banky mongrel pup. My dog, my dog, so full of mischief, so full of love. For a while I had to watch out where I sat. The rug got funky and he chewed up my hat. He still does that once in a while when he gets mad. But it's been pretty even after all. I mean, I taught him all I know about playing ball, and he's helped me get rid of a lot of stuff that I used to have. Sometimes friends drop by for a couple of beers. We all sit around, take turns rubbing his ears and calling him. It's been that way ever since he was a pup. And he sleeps with me. When I turn over, well, he turns over. Then I turn over, then he turns over, then I turn over, and we get up. Sometimes I get home and I'm feeling down. I look over and there's that hound just staring at me with his big old wild eyes. I think somebody loves me, my dog Harry, and what's more than that, he can fetch and carry, and that's better than most, I surmise. As my life keeps moving through its different conditions, the biggest changes come with the smallest decisions. You're in for a surprise if you think you got it figured, I've found. I mean, who'd ever think I'd dote on a pet? But looking back, I always forget what I did with my time before my dog was around. My dog.